Hi friends, welcome to Crime Voice. I'm your host, Candace, and today I have a case for you that has been solved, but unfortunately, you know, some of those cases, once they're solved, they just keep going, and today is one of those cases, so I hope you stick around. Welcome back, guys. I know it has been a while, so I wanted to give you an explanation before we get started. First, I want to say that I'm going to strive to get up a new podcast every week on Tuesday, but if it is a bigger case like the one we are covering today, I might miss the once a week upload. I want to make sure I am bringing you the most accurate and precise information, and sometimes that means a little longer of a research period. Secondly, is if you like our podcast, please interact with us on Instagram and Facebook. This helps me grow and continue to provide content for you that I know you're gonna like. Also, stay tuned because there will be an update coming soon about Demaje Oliver's case, and I'm striving for next week. I'm striving for next Tuesday. I'm just waiting to make sure that nothing else comes out, and I'm waiting for them to say when a court date is. So let's get into today's story. Today's story is one that everyone has probably heard. And when I first heard this story, I went down an absolute rabbit hole and have been obsessed ever since. Anything new that comes out, I have to read it. I have to listen to it. And today we're going to talk about the devastating murders of Shanann, Bella, and Cece Watts. I want to start by letting you know who the Watts family was. Shanann Watts was 34 years old and Chris Watts is 35 years old. They were married and lived in Frederick, Colorado in a beautiful two-story home with their two daughters, Bella, who was 4, and Celeste, who was 3 years old. I'm going to call Celeste Cece from now on because after doing research, that is what everyone called her, and I just think it's right. They moved to Colorado from North Carolina back in 2012. There is a video of Shanann basically gushing about how wonderful a man that Chris was, how she was going through a really hard time in her life. I think if I'm not mistaken, she was just diagnosed with lupus when he first confronted her on Facebook. She basically talks about in this video how she added him on Facebook because she was like, I'm never going to meet him. What could it hurt? And then one thing led to another. And 8 years later, he was the best thing that ever happened to her. Shanann also posted a video in June or July basically confirming that she was pregnant with their third child and that she was 15 weeks pregnant. This baby was going to be their first boy, and they were going to name him Nico. Shanann was a sales representative for an MLM named Level, and this caused her to be very active on social media. So everyone around them described Shanann as very outgoing, likable, and sociable. Chris worked for an oil and gas company named Andarco. When you ask their friends and people that knew them, they would say they thought that Chris and Shanann were a solid couple, and no one ever suspected that they had any issues. On the outside, they came across as a loving, happy couple. All of that changed on August 13th of 2018. Shanann was out of town and was coming home that night. At 1:48 a.m., Chris and Shanann's doorbell camera caught Shanann being dropped off at home by her friend Nikki. According to Chris, he woke up around 4 or 5 a.m. to get ready for work, and at 5:27 a.m., a neighbor's security camera picked up Chris backing his truck up into the driveway. Chris was able to explain this to authorities by saying he was loading up his work stuff into the back of his truck. At 10 a.m. on August 14th, Shanann had a doctor's appointment to check on baby Nico, but she never showed up. People knew this wasn't like Shanann, so they started to get concerned. Shanann's friend Nikki said she was starting to become concerned because she wasn't responding to any texts or calls, and again, this was not like Shanann. Shanann's whole job was on her phone, so there wasn't very many times that you would see Shanann without it. Because she knew this was unusual, Nikki and her son went to Shanann's house and couldn't see the girls or Shanann there. But her car was still parked in the garage. Chris said that before he found out that no one could get into contact with Shanann, he wasn't worried because he thought maybe she was just busy or at a friend's house for a play date. But when Nikki called him and told him that she couldn't see any sign of the girls, he knew something was wrong. Around 1:40 p.m., Nikki decided to call the Frederick Police Department to do a welfare check. The police came out and checked around the house and looked in the windows, but stated he couldn't enter the house without the homeowner's permission. There's also a video in the Netflix documentary that shows Nikki on the phone with Shanann's parents and Shanann's parents basically begging Nikki to tell the police officer that they own the house and that they can enter. But this didn't work. Chris ended up showing up and giving officers access to his house. I don't know if you've watched the police cam or even the Netflix documentary on this case, but if you can't see the shadiness and just weird behavior that Chris is giving off, you would understand that he's suspicious from the moment he shows up. There was nothing that pointed to Chris inside the house or really anyone else. Everyone was pretty worried at this point because they noticed that Shanann's purse was on the island in the kitchen with all her medicine, money, and credit cards. At this time, the news media started getting involved and putting Shanann, Bella, and Cece's face out there. I would also like to mention, with Shanann being such a social media presence because of her job, they also found her phone in the house, which makes this even more of a emergency because, like we stated before, anybody that knew Shanann knew that she wasn't ever very far from her phone. They were asking anyone to come forward if they knew anything or if they had seen these three people. I mean, a mother with two kids under five shouldn't be too hard to spot. On August 14th or 15th, I have seen both dates. The Colorado Bureau of Investigation and the FBI both got involved on this case and started a mass search. The community really gathered around and did what they could to help. You had people handing out flyers, you had people joining in on the search, and that is so important because in some cases that I've been researching, it's like only a handful of people know, and anything could happen, especially in such a big town. No one in this community could comprehend what was going on in their little town. On this day, Chris did an interview with the news media, and you could already tell something was off. When I watched this interview, I watched it multiple times, and I continued to get mad every single time I watched it. He is smiling. When you're watching the interview, he is smiling throughout the whole thing and doesn't shed a tear. Now, some people always react differently, but just the vibe and the demeanors he was putting off just really, it set me off. The next day, police started investigating using a drone, and for some reason, they were suspecting that the bodies might be near the oil field that Chris works at. When they were looking at the footage of the drone, they found the matching bed sheets to the ones that were in the Watts' home. A few hours after they found the sheets, they found out that Chris was having an affair with a coworker. Let's talk about this affair because everybody's on either on one side of she participated and she helped Chris, and the other one is she was just an innocent piece to the puzzle. So let's go over this before we continue going on about what happened. Chris was having an affair with a woman named Nicole Kessinger that he met from work. Nicole was 30 years old at the time. She had no kids and a college degree. She is or was a geologist. We don't know what she's doing at this moment. She has since changed her name, so this will be all be information that I have on her from when all of this went down. So basically, her former life. At first, Nicole was telling people, allegedly, because I wasn't there, that she didn't know Chris was married. But she was going in Chris Watts' house and seeing all the pictures of Chris, Shanann, Bella, and Cece, but claims that she didn't know he was married. Chris now says that Nicole did know, besides the fact that she saw all the pictures, but that he was laying in Nicole's bed when Shanann called and he got up to take the call. When he took this call, it caused an argument between him and Nicole because she thought she would always have to play second fiddle. Nicole, though, says she met Chris at work in 2018 and thought he was handsome. She says that around June or July of 2018, they started talking and then it quickly led to going on dates. I don't know if you know that there's videos about the interrogations with Nicole or if you knew and you just didn't watch them, but I strongly believe that the investigators dropped the ball. I don't think they actually conducted the investigation like they should have. It was more of a friend tactic, and it was, okay, that's what happened. Okay, bye. And they didn't really press her. In these interviews, Nicole is acting nonchalant about the whole relationship, basically saying that they had only been dating for 6 weeks and that it wasn't that serious. But 9 days before the murders, she spent 2 hours looking for wedding dresses online. In July of 2018, Nicole started Googling, "The man I am having an affair with says he is going to leave her." So here's my thing. If you're sitting in an interrogation room in August saying you didn't know he was married, but in July you were Googling things that reference the man that I'm sleeping with says he's going to leave her, or even Googling the word affair, I don't know if I believe that you didn't know he was married. On top of those Google searches, she also had a Google search on August 8th that said, "marrying your mistress." And I just don't know if I believe that she didn't know he was married. And that might all be she's guilty of. But in my mind, if you lie in an interrogation, then what else are you lying about? Another weird thing that Nicole did was she deleted all her text messages before she went in to speak to the investigators. So I want everyone to understand that they didn't call her in. She called them and said, "I'm coming in." So she had enough time and knew that she basically knew what she was doing. She deleted all the text messages and everything that pertained to her and Chris's relationship. She even called her friend and had her friend delete text messages that Nicole sent her with Chris's name or talking about Chris. So it's just weird. And everyone knows when you delete your text messages, they're not actually gone. But she also did another Google search right before she went in, and it said how to permanently get rid of text messages. And I just find this suspicious. And again, it could all just look bad, but I'm not I don't believe in coincidences. And this is all just very suspicious to me. In 2020, it has come out that Nicole Kessinger's phone pinged at 6:16 a.m. on August 13th near Chris Watts's home. And if we remember, that's the morning of the murders. And in an interview with Chris and Shanann's neighbor, his neighbor admits Chris was acting weird and that when you watch the footage of Chris backing his truck up into the driveway, it doesn't look like his truck is coming from right in front of the house. It looks as if his truck is coming from further down the street. So where was he coming from? But let's go back to the Nicole's phone ping. Nicole lives in Thornton and Anadarko is in Platteville. I will upload a map on our Instagram page and our Facebook so you can get a better picture. But basically, Thornton is south, then it's Frederick, then it's Platteville. And people can make the argument that she was just driving to work, but looking through her phone history and checking those pings, she usually took Highway 85 through Brighton and Fort Lipton. And for some reason that morning, her phone pinged in Frederick. Her phone only pinged four times out of the 235 for this billing period. So it's highly unlikely that we can use the argument that this was her normal everyday way to work. We know where some of these pings are for that were close to Chris Watts' home. The first ping was from July 14th, and this was the day that Nicole and Chris went to the car museum. Ping 2 and 3 was on July 18th at 4:34 p.m. as well as 4:40 p.m. and she was around the Chris Watts' house. On these days, she pinged talking to Chris, and allegedly these are the days that her and Chris got into a big argument and she was sitting outside the Watts' home and calling him to explain why she was upset. Then we get to the fourth ping, which was the morning of the murders. So now that we have a little bit about the affair, let's go back to the investigation. When the police confront Chris with this information, he says, "I will tell the truth after I talk to my father." So the police came back with the video surveillance of the matching sheets and everything that they found. And he says, "You know what? I'll tell the truth after I talk to my father." So the police let Chris speak to his father. And if you haven't seen the footage of this, please go watch it. I will try to link the page on our Facebook and in our Instagram description. I don't know if I'll be able to, but I definitely will try. And basically, he talks to his father and says, "I had to do it. She was hurting my girls." He tried to insinuate that Shanann killed the girls and he lost it and killed her. At 11:30 that same night, Chris Watts was arrested. On August 16th, Chris admitted to killing his wife and the kids. After Chris was denied bail and put into jail, he admitted where he put the bodies. Chris told authorities that Shanann was in a shallow grave wrapped in a bedsheet on his job site, and he had put the girls in the oil tanks submerged in all the oil. On August 20th, the Weld County DA's office officially announced that Chris Watts was being charged with a total of 9 counts. 3 counts of murder in the first degree, naming Shanann, Bella, and Cece, with an additional 2 counts for a death of a child who had not yet attained 12 years of age. 1 count of unlawful termination of pregnancy in the first degree, and 3 counts of tampering with a deceased human body, naming Shanann, Bella, and Cece. So now that we know a little bit about the case, and I will tell you there are more details to how he committed the murders, when he killed the girls, but it's sad. It is so sad. And if you're as interested as you are, as I am, look those videos up. It's said that he didn't kill the girls until he dropped Shanann's body off. And he smothered Cece first. And then he went to Bella. And it's said that Bella fought so hard that she almost bit her tongue off. And she even kept saying, "Daddy, no, Daddy, no." There's so much more information. And a lot of it is just, it tears me up. But I would definitely do your own research, read through, so you know what type of man this guy is, because we're about to get into some other stuff. And let's talk about where Chris Watts is now. Chris Watts is currently in prison, which I wholeheartedly believe he should be. He has come out and said that all he can do is think, that what he has done haunts him all day, every day. That he can hear little baby Bella saying, daddy, no, please don't. And good. I truly think that's a good thing. Chris has also come out and said in an interview that he didn't think he was going to get sentenced with 3 life sentences and 48 years. He didn't think he was going to get life in prison at all, even though he killed his whole family. I'm confused on what he thought he was going to get, but let's just keep moving forward. According to Jackie Salo from the New York Post, in an article in People magazine reported that Chris hates holidays in prison, that they aren't the same, and quote, "all the prison serves is bland turkey and potatoes." Chris has also come out and said that if he would have never met Nicole, then he doesn't think he would ever done this. Chris is also trying to get a sentence reduction and is trying to file a 35C appeal. Within the last week, according to the DailyMail.com, the 35C appeal is getting closer to being approved because Chris has stated he is going to tell the whole truth this time. With this information coming out, Nicole Kessinger has come out of hiding and wrote Chris in jail, stating, "We need to get together and have a meeting and clarify some things." Which makes me think, did she have anything to do with the murders? And what is it that you need to clarify with him? I'm going to tell you some of my theories. I think Nicole had something to do with it. I think that once the police got Chris's confession, they stopped investigating and called it a closed case. But there was too many inconsistencies in Nicole's story, and the fact that her phone pinged in Frederick that morning of the murders, I can't get it out of my mind. If she didn't help murder them, I think she helped get rid of the bodies. I think she helped him. In some capacity, I think she helped them. And that's all I have on this case today. Please follow our Instagram and our Facebook and let me know what you think on the post for today's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next week. This information was found from the Netflix documentary American Murder, thedailymail.com, Udi Pack from biography.com, several YouTubers, including Christina Randall, Kendall Ray, and Daniel Hallen. Also, the Crime Junkies podcast. All right, crime lovers, I will see you on Tuesday.